Silicon was so fickle that when the Great Research Division at Bell Labs began efforts to create non-mechanical switches, one of its first directives was to cancel all research on silicon. Luckily, Bell Labs was also very big, and directives in large companies are easy to sidestep. There was at least one researcher there, Russell Ull, who'd been intrigued by silicon's changeable nature for years. He put fragments of it in the circuits of radio receivers, which he then placed in his son's baby carriage. Then he'd stroll around New York, getting the pleasure of measuring exactly when silicon conducted electricity or not, while also giving his son a good airing. When Bell tried to cancel his research, he finagled a way around the company's directives and kept a silicon group on. By 1946 and then 1947, what was happening inside silicon was finally becoming clear, due to that early work of Ull and others. Silicon will sometimes form perfect crystal lattices, stretching like a dizzying M.C. Escher drawing, where a three-dimensional scaffold stretches on to infinity. But perfection is hard to find on our planet. When silicon is found in the wild, or melted, and then cooled down in a factory, it's more likely that tiny cracks and gaps will appear in the perfect scaffold. A few intruder atoms, such as phosphorus, readily slide into cracks in the lattice, and they bring intruder electrons. Nice, vulnerable, extra electrons. If the only thing those electrons did was travel along swiftly, the silicon would simply have become another switch that was always on. But Ull and the others knew enough of quantum mechanics to realize that the electrons, which shared the spaces inside a silicon lattice, could affect and sometimes slow each other, even over distances that on the atomic scale were huge. When just the right number of intruder electrons were put in there, these strange effects could be adjusted to suddenly make it impossible for the electrons to leap along in the way that would transmit an electric current. But with a slightly different adjustment from outside, produced by Bell researchers peering down at their lab bench creations, poking and prodding, and adding different substances or applying, ever so carefully, different force fields, the bizarre slowdown effects would end, and the electrons could be let free to quickly speed forward again. The chemistry was too hard for any single individual to handle, and Ull was getting out of his depth. The resources of Bell Labs began to be shifted to Walter Bratton, a quiet experimentalist who'd been a rancher in Oregon, and John Bardeen, an even quieter theoretician from Wisconsin. Bardeen was so quiet and young-looking that when he'd asked older students at the University of Wisconsin to play billiards for money, they'd invariably taken up his offer. He was just as quietly polite when he took their money after the games. He was a superb player and one of the best hustlers the campus had known. Now, in the fourth-floor offices of an innocuous research block in Murray Hill, New Jersey, the two friends, Bratton and Bardeen, used insights from Ull and from chemistry teams at Purdue. They used translated documents recounting abortive German wartime research on semiconductors. They used their knowledge of quantum mechanics and of new chemical fabrication techniques, and they never let up. In October 1947, they were getting the first signs of success, and by December 1947, they were certain. They could make electrons start flowing, and they could also make them stop. They'd built the atomic-level on-off switch Turing had sought. It was one of the great discoveries of modern times. In all of human history, mankind's labor has been held back by the awful force of friction. Hose scrape and drag along the ground. The slaves who built Egypt's pyramids spent almost all their energy in overcoming friction within their shoulder and leg muscles, or between the huge slabs they were moving and the ground underneath. Steam engines and car engines, and even the fastest airplanes' jet engines, also waste tremendous energy on overcoming friction. But these silicon rocks can shift electric currents through in one direction or another, and the rock itself doesn't have to move, swiveling bodily like a big metal switch to one side or the other. That would be too slow and cumbersome. The rock can simply sit there, Buddha-like, and transform internally, allowing streams of electrons to be shunted down veins of modified ore inside it as needed.